get ready for a brand new season of Sports Talk. Join Ian Levenstein, Jason Green, Joey Maggs, and all the rest on The Sporting Goods. Mondays from 3 to 4 on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. It's all part of the 5-Hour Sports Block on Mondays.
Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. And of course, we are podcasting at speakgeekspeak.com. Episode 26 of the Geek Speak podcast is officially underway, and I hope you guys enjoyed the ginormous 25-episode celebration, which basically consisted of episode 24, the special These Guys Are Otakudom, and the 2.5-hour episode 25, which were released over the past week. And once again, thank you very, very much to Sean Whalen of Ohio, who's Dr. Norge in the Comic Geek Speaks forums, and to, of course, Robert Welkner of CoinOp TV for joining me for the showcase spotlight. And we are finally back to the regular schedule here on Geek Speak. And we got a lot of great stuff to talk about today, including some of the big news here, including the fact that iTunes is about to go subscription. Now, not for regular old music, but for its television content. What's this going to do to your wallet? Well, we'll get into that on today's show. As well, some iPod news. Ever wanted to play Pac-Man on your iPod? Well, it's about damn time. It's there. Oh, you have to love it. The retro news, as always, is plentiful. Also, the fact that Metrolink has been forced to cover up a poster on a tram platform in Britain that was an advertisement for the PSP. Is Sony just trying to get some attention to them, or was this really their plan? It's a pretty damn good question. I'll get into that. And we have the top 10 most memorable villains, courtesy of IGN. Are these guys actually memorable? That would be a very, very good question. And I am going to critique that list. Quick little blurb about Google. Tired of just going to Google.com where there's other ways to get to Google, and they have some really, really odd HTTP proxies that you can go through, some of which I really never expected to see ever, but now I am. Interesting. Very, very, very interesting. Also going to get into some comic news, because that's something I always end up doing. I've got my thoughts on the X-Men 3 trailer, which aired this past Monday on 24. Do, 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 do. Okay, that's my 24 bit there. And definitely have a lot to say about that, and I will say pretty much everything that is on my mind as it comes to my mind. And other things that I will be discussing on today's show, a review, a comic book review of Emo Boy Number 1. And this is out of Slave Labor Graphics. It's one of the many comics I got at New York Comic Con, and I can't wait to talk about that on today's show. But let's get things started with the iTunes news, as iTunes is going through some changes, and they're probably good changes for iTunes. We'll just have to wait and see how it pans out. This is courtesy of my information man, David Price, once again giving me the information that I so very, very need. And the news is coming out of ZDNet, news.zdnet.com. Here we go. iTunes in a monthly deal with Comedy Central. Apple's computer iTunes music and video store on Wednesday launched a new service called MultiPass that lets users buy TV shows on a monthly basis. iTunes is launching the service in partnership with Viacom's Comedy Central Network, which is rolling out The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and The Colbert Report. It's Rapport. It's French, bitch. On the service, fans will be able to buy the next month's series of 16 new episodes via MultiPass for $9.99 or to pay $1.99 per episode. Eddie Q, Apple's vice president of iTunes. By the way, that's the best name ever. Eddie Q. Just really expect him to be a rapper or something like that. So MultiPass is not a subscription service, even though customers would pay for it on a monthly basis. This is something that you can always own as a download, he said. That makes it different from other online music subscription services like Napster or Real Networks Rhapsody, where customers lose their music if they unsubscribe. TV shows and other videos have been available for sale on iTunes since last year. Comedy Central announced a relationship with iTunes 6 weeks ago, with shows including South Park, Drawn Together, and Comedy Central Stand Up. Now, what is this going to mean for all you folks out there? Well, it means things are probably going to end up being really, really good in the upcoming future. You know how annoying it is to go onto iTunes and download individual episodes of something that you know you're going to end up with a season of? I mean, seriously, that can be a gigantic pain. You got to make sure to go onto that website every single week to get yourself that brand new episode of your favorite show. Well, what this is allowing you to do is just pay the lump fee and you'll get yourself The Daily Show, The Colbert Report. And you're really not going to have to worry about paying anything after that. $9.99, very reasonable price. And also announced is that there are going to be deals with individual shows of other networks, and none of these have actually gone down yet, but it's pretty much been announced that in the future, you will be able to sign up for year-long passes of your favorite shows, both current and previous seasons of these shows. So that might very well be Lost someday. That might very well be Desperate Housewives. We don't know. We're just going to have to find out as time goes on. But very, very interesting turn of events for iTunes. And I think this is on the way to making the iTunes Music Store truly an iTunes music and video store. I mean, for a while here, sure, they've sold videos, but that's basically the only part of it that you've gotten. I mean, the videos were subpar quality, in my opinion. I mean, obviously, these are being made for the iPod, so the resolution of the videos is not really going to be the strongest when compared to other things you can get illegally. And I'm not saying that you should or anything like that, but there are going to be episodes of Lost that are going to be much higher quality out there on the internet than what you will find at the iTunes store. And that's one of the reasons why I haven't been purchasing any of these things from iTunes, because I don't have a video iPod. I do not have a iPod at all. I don't have any sort of portable video player. So when I get these files, I'll probably end up watching them on my computer. And I have a 1280 by 1024 monitor that allows me to watch damn good quality videos at a high resolution. If my resolution is not high for the videos, I will not even bother. It's as simple as that. And that's the reason why I have not gotten stuff from the iTunes store. What this season pass means is that you might very well get higher resolution shows at one point or another. If they do decide to do that, I'll be a very happy man. Because who knows, there could even be a higher resolution iPod video coming out soon, or at least sometime soon, maybe in a year or so or something like that. Because, you know, those mock pictures have been all over the place. You never know. I'd love to see the iPod video store get better. The music store's pretty good. The video store needs some improvement. This multi-pass system is probably a good thing. Individual videos are not nearly as powerful as multi-passes. I mean, there's a reason why people buy games, baseball games, in bulk. It's because they don't want to get those individual games. I myself have a Sunday season ticket pass for the New York Yankees. There are people out there who get the 8-game plan, which allows them to get 8 games at once. Similarly, people buy TiVos so that they won't have to set their TiVo every single week. They just set it for the season, which is great. And now with iTunes, you have a similar service. This is going to be very beneficial for iTunes. I would not be surprised if a lot of people sign up for this right off the bat, especially considering that it's very popular shows like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report. The Daily Show gets more viewers every single week. And with the added publicity of Jon Stewart doing the Oscars, by the way, he did an amazing job in my opinion, But again, to some other people's opinions, it wasn't too good, but I love Jon Stewart's performance. Thank you very much for the segue. You're welcome, Ian, anytime. And the Colbert Report is yet another thing that grows with popularity every single day. Every episode, Stephen Colbert becomes more and more comfortable being the host of his own show. I mean, he started off very, very shaky because, well, he was a correspondent for most of his time with The Daily Show. A couple times he would fill in for Jon when he was either ill or having yet another baby. His wife is very, very plentiful with those. Who am I kidding? It's only their second kid. Anyway, Stephen Colbert is the type of guy who will get plenty of people watching his show. He's got plenty of great fans out there from his Daily Show years and from his Strangers with Candy years and everything in between. iTunes picking him up for an entire season is a great move. And this is actually only going to increase his popularity because a lot of the times, and people, The Office is a wonderful example of this. A lot of the times when people buy shows on iTunes, they immediately then start watching it on the TV on a regular basis. The whole reason why The Office got picked up for an entire season, 24 episodes this season, when last season they only had, I believe, 6 for the entire season. That really says something right there. It's because it grew in popularity because of iTunes. The Colbert Report and The Daily Show are only going to benefit from this, and so will iTunes in general. And speaking of the iPod, well, I was talking about iTunes, but they're sort of similar, iPod and iTunes. Whatever. Screw you, Segway. The iPod meme brings Pac-Man to the iPod. Ooh, how sweet it is. Partially contributed by Toby Cook, who is now a close friend of mine, I would say so, thanks to the internet. And he is in Seattle, and we might be making an announcement sometime soon. Yeah, little hint there. Nothing official yet, so I'm not going to give the ball away yet, but you might be hearing something from us sometime soon. Anyway, both him and I literally found this story at the exact same time, so I'm giving co-credit to Toby here, and I'll certainly give credit to Engadget for giving me the news. iPod meme brings Pac-Man to the iPod. Love it or hate it, you've got to admit that the iPod would certainly be a lot more fun if you could play Pac-Man on it. And now, thanks to the iPod meme project, you can. A subset of the iPod Linux project, iPod meme, aims to bring the meme game emulator to iPods, allowing owners to play classic games on their audio players. Currently, the emulator is confirmed to be able to run Pac-Man and Ms. Pac-Man on the Nano and iPod with video. Other classics supported by MAME are also supported, so you should be able to play Pengo and, yes, Joust on your iPod. Woohoo! You know, looking at the picture here, it looks really, 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 really good for just being a Nano. And that's what this looks like it is, because the screen is very, very small. But It's readable, and for a thing like Pac-Man, all you really need to be able to see is the Pac-Man itself and the little demons that he's chasing. Waka, 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 waka. So as long as you can see those, you're pretty well off. And you got to turn it on its side, but that's to be expected because, well, it's an arcade game, and it would look very, very strange if you're playing it with the normal width and height of the iPod, considering that the iPod screen is longer horizontally than it is vertically. And with a arcade game, it's the reverse. So just flip your iPod around and you'll be able to play your arcade Pac-Man. Waka, 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 waka. Oh my freaking God, is it fun to say waka? Waka, 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 waka. Okay, I'm done. Now, will this lead to bigger and better things? I certainly hope so, because MAME, for those of you who don't know what MAME is, and I've mentioned it a couple times on previous podcasts, but MAME is an emulator that allows you to play old arcade games on your computer. And there are plenty of MAME ROMs out there, although it's hard to find them these days, but I'm sure you could probably find a torrent with a couple hundred or thousands of them, literally. Pretty much every arcade game that you could possibly imagine has been made into a ROM at one time or another, which is great for fans of games like myself. And this might give me more of a reason to get an iPod someday, because I like being able to play games on anything. And being able to play games on the iPod, it's sort of like, you know what this reminds me of, actually? Back in the day, back when I was still in high school, I had a Texas Instruments calculator, and I believe it was the TI-84, if I remember correctly. And what this allowed me to do is download games, more like transfer them, onto the Texas Instruments calculator. And what it did is it had these fun little games that we were able to play. This is sort of what it's reminding me of here. They're starting off small. And there were some more complicated games on later versions of the Texas Instruments calculator. The earlier versions really didn't have much you could go with, but ones with better screen resolution and all that, you're able to play stuff like Pac-Man and Mario Brothers even, if you find the right person who has it to give it to you. But this is sort of the way it's starting off here. They're starting off with the classics, the easy-to-emulate games, and from there, who knows, you could be playing NBA Jam someday on your iPod, which would kick ass. Totally would be. I would love to be able to do that. So the iTunes news looks good. The iPod news looks good as well for different people. The iPod news is good for gamers. The iTunes news, very, very good for TV-iphiles out there. So I think this subscription service might turn into something really, really big here. And the biggest thing also is that, like they mentioned, the main difference between the iTunes service and the Napster or Real Networks Rhapsody, by the way, who uses Real Networks anymore? Ugh, God. Except for baseball games, which is the only really good thing you can find on there these days. There's so much better stuff out there than Real. I mean, Real Player Alternative makes it so much easier for me because I cannot stand Real Player, and I'm tired of buffering. Really, really am. But that's great about this service. Napster and Real Networks Rhapsody don't let you keep your stuff if you decide one day, you know what, maybe I really don't want this anymore. iTunes is letting you keep it. That is where they will succeed. There's no limit on TV. They realize that, and they're going about it a very, very good way. I hope it leads to more things on iTunes in the future, because I would love to be able to get entire seasons of shows that have not even been released on DVD yet from iTunes. I mean, could you imagine if they made a deal with WB and brought over some of those old cartoons that haven't been translated over to DVD yet? Could you imagine getting Animaniacs or Freakazoid from iTunes? You know how happy I would be? For those of you who listen to the American Animation Showcase Spotlight, you know how happy I would be about that. And plenty of other great shows out there have not made it to DVD yet. Andy Richter Controls the Universe, I'm looking at you. So, who knows? iTunes could be the gateway to entire seasons of programming. I'm ready for it. And I'm sure plenty of my listeners are too. Season pass, multipass, give it a go. So, the PlayStation, and the PSP, to be particular, has gone through a bit of a rough time when it comes to its advertising. The advertisements in America were a bit risque and kind of weird, to say the least. The ones about the cheese, I had no idea what the hell was going on there, and I really could not understand the whole, "It's cheese you can listen to on the go." I mean, oh my God. And by the way, I would not want to listen to cheese, okay? It's kind of dull. And cheese in general, that usually means cheesy songs as well. But yeah, I'm done with that. Now, in the world of advertisements, yet again, this time they're pissing off the Brits. And that can be a bad thing. Those Brits bite. Here is the story out of the Manchester Evening News. No PlayStation, said Metro bosses. Metrolink has been forced to cover up a poster on a tram platform reading, "Take a running jump from here." Oh, God. The poster advertising PlayStation was spotted by a railway worker, and Metrolink was ordered to take it down for fear it could encourage people to leap onto the line. Metrolink says the poster was the responsibility of J.C. DeCaw, which is in charge of billboards at the station, and they were told to cover it up as soon as they realized what it said. The poster on the platform in the underground station at Piccadilly, that's a fun name, was covered over with tape and was due to be taken down today. A spokesman for Network Rail, which runs Piccadilly Station but not the Metrolink platform, said an employee spotted it and said it was a bit inappropriate. The ad is covered now at the station. You know what? PlayStation has lost its mind. Okay, what is the point of putting a take a running jump here sign at a train station of all things, okay? You know how many lunatics are out there? You know how many people there are in the world that are looking for an excuse to just end it all? And I know that might be a bit controversial to say, but there are plenty of people out there who don't really enjoy life too much. And when their favorite game system tells them to take a running jump here, they very well might listen. It's hard to believe, it's hard to fathom, but it could very well be the case. Okay, PlayStation, I know that you're trying your best to get your product out there, but this is not the way to do it. Okay, it's one thing to have weird ads about cheese. It's another thing to basically tell people to jump onto train tracks. Now, I know that that's not their intent. I know that that's not what they meant, but they really should have thought a bit better about this. And the advertisement itself is very, very plain. That's the best way to put it. It's just red lettering with a white background. When you're advertising something, it's sort of a good idea to maybe have the product on it. That might be nice. In fact, actually, to tell you the truth, had they put a PSP on this advertisement where that white is and said take a running jump here and underneath is a PSP, it would have actually been a bit more appropriate. But when you're just saying those words, words can mean a lot. And that's certainly the situation here. Okay, and people have asked, did PlayStation do this just to get the publicity over in Britain? And they very well could have, because, well, PlayStation is out of their minds. I mean, with all they're doing with the PlayStation 3, and might even be overkill in some ways, the fact that they keep telling people, oh, it's coming out, and yet we've seen no working copy of it yet, other than the mock-ups we've seen at things like E3 and other Japanese gaming conventions. I mean, there's not much you can go with here. PlayStation is looking to save their ass, okay? They are looking to keep people interested in them. And that might lead to some craziness, but this kind of sorta maybe drew the line. And I'm really not making that up. Okay? I really hope that there's somebody from PlayStation listening and they realize just how stupid a move they just made. Because it's bad enough that a lot of parents out there think that games lead to violent personality shifts in their kids. If they play too much Halo, then they're going to start shooting things. If they play too much wrestling games, then they're going to start powerbombing their friends. It's bad enough that there really is no moral compass to gaming to a lot of people. And this just adds to that even farther. Okay? It shows irresponsibility and it shows no respect for the well-being of the people involved with PlayStation. That's the fans, not the guys in charge. Okay? You've got fans out there. Think about their well-being. Don't tell them to take a running jump here. Kind of stupid. Moving on to other gaming news, IGN released their top 10 most memorable villains a couple of days back. And I saw it and immediately thought that I needed to touch on this. Because some of the villains on there, I really don't see why they're there. But what are you going to do? Here's their top 10. okay? And this is found at pc.ign.com, even though most of them are regular game characters, but I guess that's where they just decided to put it. Number 10 on their list would be Bowser from the Super Mario Brothers series. And you know what? I can see that. I don't see him as number 10, though. I see him much higher up than that on my list. I mean, Bowser was the quintessential baddie for most of the years of gaming. I mean, that's changed a bit over the years. He's not nearly as popular as he used to be, but still, he was the evil badass. In Super Mario Bros. 3, in Super Mario Bros., in most of its Super Mario Bros. Games, you had Bowser to fight. And then Super Smash Bros. Gave him a new popularity, as well as Mario Kart and things like that. I really think he's higher than 10. Number 9, Dr. Robotnik of the Sonic the Hedgehog series. And of course, the Dr. Robotnik they show is the Dr. Robotnik from the Advance series, which looks nothing like Dr. Robotnik at all. But I'm not going to get into that rant right now. Number 8, Dracula from Castlevania. That's definitely deserves to be there. Number 7, Evil Otto from Berserk. I never played Berserk, so I really have no comment on this. I'm sure plenty of people out there have played it. If you have, let me know, because I have no idea what the hell this giant bouncing smiley face is, although he does make me giggle a bit. Tee-hee. That was odd. Psycho Mantis from Metal Gear Solid is number 6, and that is definitely somebody that belongs there. Psycho Mantis is probably the best Metal Gear character on the villain side. I mean, nothing was cooler than when he would scan your mind and knew exactly what you were thinking, and you had to switch controllers in order to get things rolling again. That was totally awesome, and you gotta love it. You totally do. Kerrigan from StarCraft is number 5. Again, never played StarCraft, so I can't really comment on that. Number 4, Shodan from System Shock. Yet again, another game that I haven't played. Dang it. Wesker from Resident Evil is number 3. Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII would be number 2. And I'm not much of a Sephiroth fan. I can see him being on the list, but I really don't see him as number 2. I mean, sure, there's a giant fandom out there for Final Fantasy, but is it really big enough to make Final Fantasy VII number 2 and you make Bowser number 10? That's a bit much. And number 1 on their list, the Nazis. Yeah, I'm not making that up. Number 1 on their list is the Nazis. And here's their explanation, too. The Nazis have been a mainstay of video game villainy since the early years of gaming. Raiders of the Lost Ark in the Atari 2600 was full of them. Medal of Honor on the PlayStation was teeming with them. And most recently, Call of Duty 2 on the Xbox 360 showed us that digital Nazis remain among the nastiest of foes. From the first digital shouts of Achtung and Common Sea, I hope that's how you pronounce that, in Beyond Castle Wolfenstein in the early 80s, to similar cries in today's titles, Nazis remain a formidable force of evil in video games. You know what? I'll give them that. The Nazis, yeah, again, not nice people. That much has been established, but they do make good video game villains. You know, I think my list would have had Bowser up at about number 4 or 3. And I would take Sephiroth and move him down to around number 8. I move Dracula up to number 5. Psycho Mantis is pretty much safe at number 6. Robotnik, I'm putting him at number 3 on my list. Wesker from the Resident Evil series, I'll move him down a bit to number 7. Evil Otto's not going to be on there for me because, again, I don't know the series. One person who I really think should have been on this list, Virgil from Devil May Cry. But again, that might be my bias coming in there. And Nobunaga. How about that? There have been so many games over the years with Nobunaga as a villain. And the Onimusha series cemented him as a wonderful, wonderful villain. But he's not on this list. And how about Big Boss? Big Boss from Metal Gear Solid. Even though they put Psycho Mantis on there, I would have actually put Big Boss on this list also. So, again, these type of lists are totally up to interpretation. Some people out there will completely love what has occurred in it, while other people are kind of not going to believe that. Difficult situation to even go into it. And I might actually write up my top 10 and list it sometime on a future episode. But this top 10, I'd say maybe about five of them I would have had in different places. Number one will stay as is. Like I said, number two really should be up higher. And anybody up there in podcasting land who has their own take on any of this stuff, please let me know, because I like talking about stuff. Yay, stuff. Stuff is fun, especially stuff that's been given to me by listeners, because that's how I know that you guys are there. And by the way, for those of you who are listening on the Brooklyn College campus, and for those of you who just, period, go to Brooklyn College, even if you're not listening on the campus, well, it'll be hard to listen on the campus. You'd probably be listening online. But anyway, I was in the most recent issue of The Kingsman, which is one of Brooklyn College's newspapers, and they did a report on podcasting, and I got to give my two cents on podcasting, and they gave me a very nice write-up. So I'd very much like to thank The Kingsman for putting me in the most recent issue. And anybody who does go to Brooklyn College, you can pick that up anywhere along the campus. So nice little segue there that had absolutely nothing to do with the top 10 villains of all time. But, I still gave myself a plug. And you know what? That's what matters, doesn't it? X-Men: The Last Stand, otherwise known as X-Men 3. Well, the theatrical trailer came out, and it was released as of about halfway through the second episode of 24 that they showed this past Monday. So that was around 9:20, I guess, somewhere along those lines. And they aired it, and I got a lot to say about this trailer. Mostly, it looked much better than I thought it was going to. Now, again, I don't know if Brett Ratner is going to end up doing a lot for the franchise or not. And I touched very briefly on the X-Men 3 trailer in the Showcase Spotlight about American Animation on one of the many tangents we went on, but I'd like to get farther into it here. My main gripe with this entire thing is the character design for Juggernaut. All right, I know that a lot of people like giving liberties on things. I know that there's a lot of artistic license in movies when compared to the original source material. But what the hell is up with Juggernaut? Okay, giving him an exposed chest, okay, when he's supposed to be wearing armor that is supposed to be impenetrable, basically, and the helmet, I'm sorry, no. Just, God, no. Whoever designed that costume should be told they should really stop designing costumes. It's just not the best look. It's not even close to the best look. And I have mega, mega issues with what was going on with that. The rest of it, however, looked pretty good. I mean, we finally got to hear Kelsey Grammer speak while in the Beast makeup. And he makes a great Beast. That I knew was going to happen, because nobody could possibly play the Beast better than Kelsey Grammer. He's always sounds like the intellectual, which is exactly what Beast is. And he looks surprisingly a lot like him with all that blue makeup on as well. So it was definitely a great choice to have Kelsey Grammer be in that. I love how crazy Magneto sounds. I mean, this really looks like he's going to go absolutely nuts in this movie, which I love seeing. Magneto is his best when he's completely lost it, when he's completely batty and has no other choice but to actually go in there and fight with everything he has. I mean, sure, he's a diplomat a lot of the times, you know, he's for mutant rights and all that, but when he completely loses it and starts killing people, that's fun. Mystique looks like Mystique, as always, even though that whole naked thing was totally just a reason to get Rebecca Romijn Stamos naked, and that's sort of much a given, even though I think she's Rebecca Romijn now, but I can barely keep track of that. The best character design in the entire thing, the best costume, Cyclops. I mean, you can see the depression in his face. So great. He has gone down a road that not many people want to go down in their life. He lost his greatest love. And, of course, she'll stay dead for 3 seconds because she's Jean Grey. But this was the first time that he lost her. So he doesn't know any better at this point. But us comic fans know she'll be back in 5 minutes. But you can see the hurt on his face. You can see that he has certainly changed. And that is not always a good thing. Change can lead to sloppiness when you're the leader of a team. And you don't know about Cyclops. He definitely looks like he has been drinking. I don't know whether he actually was or not, but yeah, he's got some issues. Will they be solved by Jean coming back? Who knows? And then, of course, it's already been given away, but I guess I'll mention it here. For those of you who haven't seen the X-Men 3 trailer, see it, please, so that I'm not spoiling anything for you here. So, spoiler, they find Jean Grey's body. Big shock. And Jean's magically alive again. But she doesn't seem to want to stick around the X-Mansion too much. In fact, she looks like she might even be shacking up with the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants at one point, which I guess would lead to the Dark Phoenix saga now, wouldn't it? Very, very interesting situation. And I really don't know what else to say about that part of it. It's a very, very tough issue to go into with Jean, because we really don't know what sort of Jean Grey we're going to find in this. We really don't know. Will it be a complete badass, or will it be the hurt Jean Grey that we've seen in the past? I'd like to see a complete badass. We also got to see a bit of what Kitty Pryde is going to look like in the X-Men 3 The Last Stand movie. And, you know, she looks like Kitty Pryde. I'm very, very glad they didn't just randomly get some girl that looks like she's 26 and try and get her to look like she's 16, 17, 18, or 19, depending on which era Kitty Pryde you go with. But Kitty looks like Kitty, which is a major plus. She looks like the short little Jewish girl. There's really no other way to describe Kitty Pryde other than that, and she can phase through stuff, which is cool. Looks like there's going to be a love triangle between Iceman, Kitty, and Rogue, which I guess works if you're not going to bring in Gambit. Although, I heard stuff about Gambit possibly being in this movie once upon a time, but I haven't heard anything since, so we won't really know until we see it now, will we? Angel, also, got to see more of him in this trailer. His wings are looking pretty good. I mean, they look a bit stiff and a bit fake, but I'm hoping with a bit of a CGI tweak here and there, they might be able to get it look a bit more realistic. And I just said bit like about 12 times too many there. Bit torrent. Anyway, that was odd. I am weird today. Angel looked really good, like I said, except for the fact that his wings need some work. The character looks dead on. Okay, they got the guy who played one of the early boyfriends of Claire from 6 Feet Under. And I can't remember his name offhand, but he's a really good actor. So I'm glad they actually were able to get him for the movie. He looks like Warren Worthington III. Let's see how he flies. Let's see how he looks. Let's see what the final product of the wings look like. But, so far so good. And, well, I'm impressed, which is a lot better than what I felt when I first heard Brett Ratner was doing the movie in the first place. Maybe it won't completely suck. Wolverine, well, come on. Hugh Jackman looks just like Wolverine when he has all that extra hair stuff in him. That much has not changed. He still looks awesome. And he's wearing a tank top at times, and he's even wearing that jacket he had for a while, and he just plays the part perfectly. So great job with Hugh Jackman. Storm has a believable wig for once, sort of. It's more of a grayish hue than the white, which certainly looks much better on her. But again, when you're looking for continuity here, how the hell did her hair change so much in 3 movies? You know, she's had a different shade of white or gray in all 3 of the movies. They really should have stuck with one color. Same thing with Mary Jane, actually. Mary Jane Watson in the Spider-Man series of movies. Her hair looked completely different in number 2. Completely different shade. It looked more like a natural redhead as opposed to the Mary Jane red that we've gotten so used to. But I don't know. I mean, I really don't know what's going to happen in this movie until I actually see it. Brett Ratner could turn out to be the best director of all time, for all we know, or he could turn out to suck. But there's definitely got to be at least some moments in the movie that are going to be amazing. I mean, the fight scenes, I'm sure, are going to be great. But let's actually see some story in this. That would make me very, very, very happy. story elements are something you really miss in some of the comic movies out there. And X-Men's been doing a great job in the past of giving you a wonderful product. Hopefully they'll continue that with X-Men 3. If they don't, I'll know who to write to, because Hollywood really likes screwing these things up. And it wouldn't be the first time Fox screwed anything up. Sorry, had to say it. Bye-bye. So like I mentioned before, you ever get tired of going to Google every single time you want to search, and yet you really like the Google engine? Heh, 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 I know the feeling. Well, you can still go to Google, but you can do it in one hell of a fashion. Oh, I love this. I totally do. HTTProxy.net has information on all of the great ways you can get the Google.com. The guys who run Google must have way too much time on their hands, and I'm not too surprised by that, considering the fact that, well, they work for Google. Sorry, I had to. But now all of these wonderful domains are available, and I'm just going to read some of these off. And by the way, some of these I think I'm actually going to make my main Google website, because it's just way too awesome. I have to admit that. So that, first of all, you got the numbers, okay, which I'm sure are probably relevant numbers to the designers of Google, like www.21150.com, www.38389438.com, www.466453.com. Then you start getting into the names. Epson.com, Archaeos.com, Atlantis9.org. That sounds oddly like a sci-fi movie. Brucer.com, Chinilab.com, and then you just start getting into the really, really odd stuff. Stuff like FloralArtByAmy.com, Fooful.com, which I totally love, and I think that might be one of the ones that I make one of my majors now. Fooful.com. Want all the search news you want? Go to Fooful.com. Ghut.org. Google. I wish I was making that up. Google.com, gmodules.com, Google.com, Google.com, Google.com. Oh my God. There's so many amazing ones on here, but here's the best one, okay? Get ready for this. Ho.org. Oh, I kid you not. I totally kid you not. They got it before the porn sites. That's great. Ho.org. When you go to www.ho.org, you'll be searching Google. Isn't that just wonderful? JenniferWanderer.com. Yet again, sounds like a sci-fi movie. Jennifer Wanderer. Only one man can save the world, and his name is Jennifer. How will he get past this terrible, terrible name and save the world? Kiefer Sullivan is Jennifer Wanderer. Go to JenniferWanderer.com for more information. Anyway, that was lame. Local2005.com. LorcanMurray.com, and the list goes on and on. I'm just going to find some of the other cool ones on here, and then you can look into them yourself. WebServiceHost.com. So that's great. WebServiceHost.com. I'll bring you to Google. And here's the best one. www.www.google.com. That is amazing. I guess it's just for people who forget to put the dot in. And Google.com. G-E-W-G-O-L. Google. That's fantastic. MarkFong.com, TarkCentral.com, TalkCentral.com, and YourMailHost.net, and many, many more. So again, if you get really, really bored of using Google someday, just go to httproxy.net/google.html, and you'll find yourself some other ways to connect to the search engine. God, is that fun. Wow. Wow is probably the best thing to say to that. There's so little words to say about Google. You could tell, like I said, they have way too much time on their hands. Google this, Google that. You hear Google everywhere. Yes, it is a very useful search engine, but don't you get tired of typing www.google.com every time? The domain name gets boring, so what to do? Google owns a lot of funny names that point to their site. That's all the text that you'll find on here, and then you go into the names. I mean, if I had something as successful as Google, I would get really, really bored someday and start registering domain names myself. I have a feeling. I'm just silly like that. And I'm sure a lot of guys out there that are listening to this podcast would do the exact same thing. It's just fun, period, you know? I mean, go out there and get yourself ho.org if you can. God, that's amazing. Google, you're my new heroes. Seriously, have my babies. Not really. You're a search engine. That would be very, very odd. But still, guys, check this out and start using some of these sites as your main search, because it's all Google in the end now, isn't it? Of course it is. It's just proxies. Yeah, there you go. I totally should have gotten some Podsafe emo music to play during this segment, but I didn't think of that until I actually stepped in here, so, oh well. I'll do that the next time I talk about this book, and who knows, there could very well be a next time, for all I know. But anyway, it's been quite a while since I've actually reviewed a comic book on GeekSpeak, and I figured, Ian? Yes, Ian? Isn't it about time you reviewed a comic book on GeekSpeak? Why, yes, Ian. Yes, it is. Thank you, Ian, for the idea. Why, you're quite welcome, Ian. Would you like a cookie? Why, thank you. I would love some. Is it chocolate chip? Why, yes, it is. And I picked up a lot of comic books. I'm not even going to laugh. I picked up a lot of comic books at New York Comic Con, and one of the comic books that I picked up was a comic book known as Emo Boy. Oh, yeah. All you people who hate emo out there, have I got a book for you. Emo Boy numbers 1 and 2 I picked up. Steve Emmond is the writer slash artist of the series, and it's put out by independent company Slave Labor Graphics. $2.95 is the going price, but you can probably get it for a bit cheaper if you look in the right places. And it's a really, really fun book. It's a great satire of the whole emo genre. I mean, I'm sure pretty much everybody out there has heard of emo at least once or twice. Emo is a phenomena, I guess that's the best way to put it. Emo music is really, really whiny and moany. But there are kids that embrace the genre of emo to the T. And in doing so, they end up adopting a lot of the depression that's associated with emo music. And this kid that is the center of the emo boy world, and his name is actually Emo Boy, is the embodiment of all of that depression. He speaks emo style poetry and things blow up. He kisses a girl for the first time and she blows up. I mean, it's that sort of stuff that makes this book so wonderful. It's such great sarcasm, and it doesn't go overboard either. Like, it's not making fun of the genre. I mean, you can tell that there's actually a respect for it. And it's just satire. It's pure out satire, but done respectfully, which is something I really, really like to see. Emo Boy, in the second issue, ends up going to see his favorite band, which I believe is called Queezer or something along those lines. Yeah, not Weezer, but Queezer. And he out-emos the lead singer and gets an enemy out of it. You know, just all of these wonderful signs of emo-dom are spread throughout the title. It's very funny, and it's a sophisticated kind of funny, too. Like, I mean, it's not just fart jokes and poop comments like some of the other books out there. This is sophisticated humor. And again, you got to go into it with an open mind as well, because if you just hate emo, then you're just going to think, oh God, it's another emo kid, and now it's actually in a comic book. What am I going to do? No, it's much more than that. It's a very, very fun and interesting experience. And even people who have never even heard of emo before will probably be able to enjoy this, just because of how outlandish some of the stuff in this is. I mean, literally, the guy speaks poetry and stuff blows up. That is awesome. I need that power. I do. I need to be able to just speak some sad stuff and have people I hate just explode. That'd be fun. All right, I'm not really serious about that. Don't go calling the cops on me now. But yeah, I would certainly give Emo Boy a rousing 4 out of 5. The art style is very unique as well. I guess it's kind of busy art, but in a very simplified sort of way. I know that that's sort of an oxymoron, but when you look at Emo Boy, it's black and white, obviously, because it's an independent book. And most independent books turn out to be black and white because it's much easier to print them that way. And you're not going to have to worry about inflated prices for any of the titles, which is certainly a good thing. But Emo Boy has a very different sort of art. It's an art style that you can love or hate. I loved it, and I'm glad I did. I mean, I went into this, basically, I picked it up on the sole fact that it was about an emo kid. And I am not too much into the emo culture. I don't really see the point of it. But I know that when an emo boy has superpowers, it can turn out to be very, very funny. And it did. So definitely pick up Emo Boy if you have the chance. I'm sure you'll be very, very happy about it. Now, one of the other books I picked up at the convention is an absolute classic. And this one I mentioned on the Comic-Con wrap-up very, very quickly, but I didn't do a review of it or anything like that. But now I must, because it was the first thing I read when I got home from the con, and I was so very, very happy that I did. I have been wanting to read this book for years and years, because this one-shot title changed the entire face of Batman's universe for years to come. And I am, of course, talking about Batman The Killing Joke by Alan Moore. Alan Moore is a genius. If it wasn't apparent to me before, it certainly is now. He wrote Batman and the Joker probably better than anybody ever has in this one shot. Obviously, and again, this is a spoiler, but it's a well-known spoiler. So if you don't want to know, fast forward a bit here. This is the book where Barbara Gordon ends up paralyzed. And it is amazing just how powerful that moment was. Mostly because of the monologue that was going on, that Alan Moore is just so good at writing. Inner dialogues and dialogue for the characters themselves just feels natural. It flows brilliantly. They were just having a casual conversation, and before you knew it, there was a Joker at the door. Bang, bang, Barbara Gordon is paralyzed. I could feel the tension in the air as I flipped through the pages. I could touch it. I could reach out and touch it, literally. It was just amazing. I'm almost at a loss for words to talk about how much I love this book. If I wasn't an Alan Moore fan before, which I was, mind you, Top 10 is one of the best things I've ever read in my life, and I love his Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, and a couple of the other books that he put out over the years I have picked up and loved. But this officially cements the fact that Alan Moore is a comic book genius, and it's just a classic, an absolute instant classic that I was so happy to pick up, and I got it in a $2 bin, and it was in great condition. Still is in great condition. I'm going to make sure it stays in great condition because this is a gem, just like Alan Moore. 5 out of 5. If I could give it a 6 out of 5, I would. That's how much I love this title. It was changing. And change is so hard to find when it's well done. And this was just fantastic. And Alan Moore, props to you for writing one of the best Batman stories of all time. One of the best of all time. You could take that to the bank, and if you haven't read it yet, find yourself a copy because you are missing out. wind-up time here on Geek Speak, where I switch things over from the geek side of things to the sports side of things. And today, the rant focuses upon the NFL, the National Football League. Well, the NFL came to a new players' agreement between the Players' Association and the owners to have a salary cap in 2007 and beyond. A brand new six-year agreement has been signed. Had this not been signed, oh my God, would the NFL have been screwed. The salary cap is what keeps the NFL running. If there was no salary cap, could you imagine, could you even imagine for a moment how unstable the NFL would be? There would be one team with every player, and the next team with maybe one star. That's it. And there's one thing that a lot of NFL and Major League Baseball and other teams forget about all the time. It's that stars do not make the team. A team is a team because of the individuals that come together and work together. Stars don't do that. It's those bit players. It's those players that nobody mentions in the scorecard, that nobody sees getting any of those, you know, extra special plays. Those are the guys that bring a team together. Had the salary cap been removed for 2007, even for a year, you would have seen those bit players go to the side in favor of the stars. It would have been outrageous contracts being signed. It would have been the complete corruption of the National Football League. It's bad enough that it's sort of corrupted already, but it would have been even farther along had this not been signed. But it was signed. And what does this agreement do? Well, first of all, the bottom teams, the teams that make the least money, will not have to revenue share with everybody else, which makes perfect sense because these are the guys that are getting the money. These are the guys who need it. And this will allow them to get their one or two star players and get a great team going. Perfect example of that, the Seattle Seahawks from this past year. Not too many major stars in the Seattle Seahawks. It was a team that came together as one. That is what the NFL needs to survive. Now that this agreement has been signed, they'll at least have that for the next 6 years. Major, major move for the NFL to get this done quickly and to make sure that we didn't have to wait. See, it would have been terrible had they decided to get this agreement done next year and screw over an entire year of the NFL. A lot of people don't notice just how much the salary cap means to the NFL. There's a reason why other leagues have never really put together a salary cap. Major League Baseball doesn't have one. They have revenue sharing, but they don't have a salary cap because Major League Baseball relies on getting those extreme contracts. And because of that, some teams suffer. In the NBA, there is a salary cap, but it's not a hard cap. And that's the whole reason why there's some NBA teams that are way over their cap and they'll never get back for at least 7 or 8 years. The NFL is done right when it comes to salary caps and to revenue sharing, and it will continue to do that for the next couple of years, for almost a decade. And that is a very, very smart move. Good going, NFL. You're back on my okay list, and you sort of, kind of, maybe you're off the crap list. Well, the Super Bowl was good for a little bit at least, so that saves you. And maybe next year will be wonderful. And it's nice to see that some of these players are not going to get cut due to the agreement that just got signed. Now, Jets, could you get yourself a quarterback, please? But that's a rant for another day. That was the windup. Now here's the pitch. Every single one of those Mondays from 3 to 4 here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. You can hear me, Ian Levenstein, along with Jason Green, Joey Mags, the ghost of Michael Hornstein, the ghost of Blue Beetle, and the ghost of Earth 2 Green Arrow on the Sporting Goods. The email address for GeekSpeak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. The forums are still available at speakgeekspeak.com/forums. That's FORUMS. with a S at the end. And don't forget to vote over at Podcast Alley. Thanks bunches to the people who have already voted. I've got around 8 or 9 votes, which is actually the most votes I've gotten on Podcast Alley since I started this. So I'm going to take that as a good sign. And anybody who does want to vote on Podcast Alley can do so. The link to Podcast Alley is at the Speak Geek Speak website. That's pretty much it for episode 26. And it's good to be back to normal after those special episodes. Special episodes are fun, but I've sort of been missing the regular episodes. And, well, now they're back. So enjoy these for a while. I'm sure I'll throw a showcase spotlight in a couple episodes here or there. We'll figure that out as the time comes. But until then, I'm Ian Levenstein. Have a great week. Enjoy your geek. And I will see you right back here next Thursday for another episode. Take care, everybody. It's cheese. You can go. Go. As soon as it was realized what it said, as soon as I keep putting the as in there, I am fantastic today. And they were told to cover it up as soon as it was realized. Oh, forget about it. A spokesman for Railway. I am on a roll. That there's going to be at least one. That's really all there is to say, isn't it? www.4665-8675309. Just go to http. Yes, it is very useful. Search engine. Most independent books turn out to be independent, of course. It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.